Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an interview with Barnaby Jeans, a leading international technology authority and leader, and the Developer Audience Marketing Manager. Barnaby, you bring an acknowledged history of considerable technology and leadership success to our audience. Considering your heavy schedule, we thank you for doing this interview with us.
My pleasure, Stephen.
Barnaby, what triggered your initial interest in technology?
Well, if I think back, you know, many, many years, my first exposure to technology was back in the mid to late 80s when I was still relatively young, and I have vivid recollections of writing basic applications on a Sinclair Spectrum and, you know, recording stuff out to tape. And I think at that time it was really, you know, the interest and the appeal was really being able to create something myself, you know, having the ability to go out, build something new, not be constrained by what somebody else had already done, not be constrained with what was already available, but to try out new ways of doing things and create something that, you know, maybe I had envisioned and wanted to be able to accomplish.
So that, I guess, that led to your sort of interest in actually studying then, competing in university?
Absolutely. I mean, I think as I went through school and got into the university stages, technology really seemed like that natural fit. It was an area that I had a lot of interest and a lot of passion, so the opportunity to then go study that in school and to really kind of formally learn about it was a great opportunity.
So before your time at Microsoft, can you profile your key roles and then the valuable lessons from each role?
Absolutely. I mean, I was very fortunate in that, you know, even when I was back in high school and into university, I had some opportunities to work in technology fields. So I started out, you know, building computers, so learning from the ground up, sort of from the hardware side of things, you know, what goes into building a typical PC these days, and kind of how that side of things worked. And then got into working at a couple of small companies, doing some entry-level network administration, doing some server installs, doing hardware repairs, doing some networking. So really got a great background, even prior to graduating, on here's how things work in the real world. Here's what you need to be able to do, and here's what you need to be able to accomplish. But I think one of the interesting things across those roles, and as I start to lead into some of the professional career, was also how do you talk to the business and how do you talk to an end customer? And that's a theme I'm going to come back to in a little bit. But certainly as I came out of university, I went straight into a couple of really interesting roles at Oracle. And at the time, they had a great internship program that basically brought in university grads on a two-year rotation to walk through four of the key areas of the business. So I had some great background from an enterprise software side on the tech support side of things, and then getting into a pre-sales environment, which is where I ultimately ended up. And again, the benefits there really were looking at, you know, from a tech world, understanding customers and their pains and their needs as they're using the software, and then moving into a pre-sales or a sales engineer type role, depending on how you want to call that, really looking at how do you articulate a business solution based on the product set and the technologies that you have available today. And I think that's absolutely a key skill that we need to think about, and people looking at technology roles need to be able to articulate not just the technology, but what that means to the business or what that means to the problem that the business is trying to solve. And then from there, I spent a number of years at Oracle doing that role quite successfully, and then ultimately made a switch to another software company, this time on the open source side of things, and helped establish their sales office. Spent a short amount of time there before ultimately ending up over at Microsoft.
Well, that's a pretty, you know, diverse background, you know, working with another major vendor, then also working in the whole open source area, and then also seeing sort of the value of having the business side and being able to sort of address it from a business solution standpoint.
And I think, you know, as I said, one of the key things that I think I've really learned and I keep coming back to is while the technology is important, if you can't articulate what the technology can do either for an individual or for a business, then that technology may not be able to live up to its full potential, or to put it a different way, the business may not realize the full potential of that software or that technology offering.
How did you get to your current position at Microsoft, and please share your key career and technology tips from this journey?
I mentioned sort of my background in terms of, you know, going through Oracle and then onto Red Hat on the open source side. You know, as I was looking at making a change from those roles, I was looking at something that would allow me some more room to grow and exposure to different opportunities. So as I ended up sort of looking at opportunities, Microsoft was a natural fit in terms of both the background that I had as well as the opportunities for different areas. And certainly, as I came into Microsoft, the opportunity to be an IT pro advisor or an evangelist seemed like a natural fit for the types of roles that I'd done in the past and the skills that I had in terms of being able to articulate the value of the solutions, the deep technology, but also be able to talk to IT managers as well as IT professionals about that technology. And then from that role, sort of looking at other opportunities landed me now in the audience marketing role.
Well, I know you were fairly successful in setting up the IT manager audience and the tech enthusiast area, and you've been one of the key principals involved in some of the launches that have occurred, including, I guess, one of the first Energize IT conferences. Can you profile that in more detail?
Absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned a couple of high-profile events and a couple of key events, and I think the one thing that's common across all of those events, whether it's a launch event, whether it's setting up things like the IT manager blog and some of the tours that we did talking to IT managers or the tech enthusiasts, the common thing across all of those is, again, coming back to how do you bring back, in a way that makes sense to the audience, the message that you have around technology. So Microsoft obviously has a vast array of technology, and as you start to look at our hardware and software partners, we also have huge amounts of solutions that are available to our customers. And I think what we forget at times as technology people is how do you make that real? So as we talk to IT managers, what do they need to think about? What's important to an IT manager in terms of the technology? How can we help them look out the next 2, 3, 4 years to think about what they should be looking at for their business? And as we look to events like Energize IT, it's looking at how do we bring that breadth of technology to the audience in a format that they're able to consume.
So in your role now as the audience marketing manager, what do you hope to accomplish, and can you overview your key initiatives, and why should the audience pay attention?
So I think there's a couple of key things. As I think about the audience marketing role and thinking about the audience that I serve, which is the developer audience, developers have a unique ability. I mean, I would almost look at development as a little bit of an artistic role. They're taking, in some cases, a concept or an idea and really bringing that to fruition, really creating something that comes back to solving that business need. So as I think about that from an audience marketing perspective, my role really is to say to the developers out there, you've got a business need that you're trying to fill, or you've got a vision in your head of what you're trying to build. I want to make that process as easy as possible for you. What are the tools that are available to you? What are the services that are available to you? What are the different technologies that you could implement on that will allow you to focus your time and energies on solving that problem or realizing that creative idea and spend less time worrying about some of the perhaps more mundane aspects of it? And to that end, we're putting together a series of events, and you're going to hear some more about Tech Days, which is a Microsoft event series that we're going to be launching a little bit later this year, which is all about providing technical skills and making sure that developers and IT professionals know how best to use our product and technologies.
So this Tech Days, it sounds like something that will provide a lot of value. Is it modeled under another or against another kind of conference that's out there worldwide?
Well, I think probably the one that's most familiar to people would be the Tech Ed conference that runs in the U.S. and worldwide. And while this isn't a Tech Ed-specific conference, it is a slightly smaller version of that, and it's something that we're going to be taking on the road across the country.
You also have ownership of the MSD and Code Awards. Can you profile what to expect in that sort of forum or event?
So MSD and Code Awards is something that we've run for a couple of years now, and the real intent around the awards program is to recognize and showcase the great work that people are doing on our platform. So really looking at perhaps as a spark or as a point of excitement to get other people interested and excited and realize that, you know, perhaps what they're building, they may not think of as groundbreaking or world class. This gives people an opportunity to share their creative work, to share those business solutions. And if I think about some of the work that won this past year, work around software that aids in cancer research to look at particular data points. people may not view that as maybe sexy or exciting, but I think that work has tremendous potential and tremendous impact and is the sort of work that we're happy to showcase.
You know, Barnaby, you have this really incredible background of success and a variety of different kinds of roles, and you've been really a key leader and sort of visionary in these different areas. So I'm going to pick your brains. What do you see as the top picks or trends in IT?
Well, there's probably a couple of things, and there's two positive ones, and I also want to touch on one that that's a little bit concerning to me. But I would say the two positive ones are really around software plus services. And I think you hear a lot of conversation around software as a service or software plus services, and those terms get sort of used interchangeably, which perhaps isn't accurate. But I think as you look to the software plus services model, there's some great examples that are currently out in the marketplace in terms of client-side applications connecting back to services either within the organization or on the in the cloud. But I think that's definitely an area that businesses are going to start to look at in terms of, are there aspects of our business computing that can be serviced through online services? The second area is one that I think there's been a lot of conversation on over the last few years, and I don't think it's one that necessarily people are looking at perhaps as in-depth as they need to, and that's certainly around IPv6. And the reason I call that out specifically is I think over the next couple of years, you're going to see some technologies rolling out as we start to see more and more devices landing on networks. It starts to become a lot simpler, perhaps, to manage those things if we can eliminate some of the network addressing issues, some of the, you know, translations that have to occur. So when I think about people being more and more mobile and working more and more out of the office, something that allows perhaps a more globally unique addressing is probably going to be advantageous. The one that concerns me a little bit, and this perhaps crosses over from an IT side into a business side as well, and that's really the view from an IT perspective and a business perspective around social media. And there's a lot of news reports that you'll see around companies that are blocking access to sites like Facebook, things like Twitter, or perhaps even some of the instant messaging tools. The thing that troubles me with that a little bit is around the workforce and the demographic. And I think what you're seeing is that younger people coming into the workforce expect to be able to use those tools as a key method of communicating, sharing their experiences, networking with their peers. And in a lot of cases, their use of those tools isn't purely a social or time-wasting environment, but it's actually a critical business use. And by cutting off access to some of those services, I think businesses, without knowing it, perhaps are having a negative impact either on employee morale or retention or even on overall productivity.
Well, that sort of concern that you mentioned kind of, I guess, ties in with this interview I conducted with the executive director of a government ministry, and they recently introduced SharePoint services, and it was precisely to help engage Generation Y and make them more passionate, give them a richer environment to increase their productivity. So that kind of ties into what you're saying. And then I see this news announcement from Scotiabank indicating that they're using SharePoint services for allowing things like user profiles and sharing of best practices and collaboration wikis and blogs. So I guess that supports what you're saying.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the what people think of as traditional technology is evolving into a much more social environment, and where you've got people that don't physically sit in the same office and don't stand outside and chat during a lunch break or hang out at the proverbial water cooler, these online sites, whether it's internal via something like SharePoint or whether it's external through something like a Facebook or any other social media, you know, I think those are ways that people are sharing their experiences and learning from each other so that in turn they can be more productive and more efficient in what they do.
Barnaby, can you further expound then on what you see as the top trends then specifically in business?
So I think the one trend from a business perspective, and this does tie back to IT, and I think a lot of these are interrelated, but it's really from a business side, businesses either recognizing or failing to recognize the relevance and the value of IT. And I think some businesses are starting to recognize that the IT organization, the technology within the business, has the ability to be a key strategic advantage or a key competitive differentiator. And there's other organizations or other groups that perhaps are still viewing it as a cost center and an area to cut costs wherever possible. So I think that there's a level of, you know, companies starting to realize that this is an area that can really impact the business, both positively and negatively. And I think as you start to look at embracing software plus services as an example, looking at social media tools, looking at what are the different trends, then you're in a position to better respond to your customer base. And there's been some great examples of large organizations that are not only embracing social media, but you can start to see them launching their own pages and sites within the social media space. They're recognizing that technology plays a huge benefit in the business. It's not just, you know, how do you keep the PCs running, how do you make sure the office suite is available and up to date, but the technology now is all-encompassing and gives you a new way that you can reach out to your customer base.
You know, there's been a lot of churn in the educational space and so forth. Do you see any trends in that area?
Well, I think the one trend that I'm seeing and I'm certainly hearing a lot about is around, you know, are students getting into careers in technology? And what does that actually look like? And I spent last Thursday at an event called XO8. It's a great opportunity that Microsoft hosts every year where we talk about our latest and greatest video games. And the reason I talk about that a little bit is it's an area that potentially allows companies to go out and talk about why technology is an interesting area to get into. And I think by the time people get into high school and into university, they've already made their career choices. I think as an industry, what we need to be looking at is how do you get students at a very young age thinking about a career in some sort of technology field? Now, whether that's an artistic field, whether that's in graphics or design, or in your traditional computer science, I think is still open for debate. But I think there's an area of students perhaps don't recognize technology as an area of the business or as a career opportunity for them to get into. So that does worry me a little bit in terms of how many people are really coming out into this field. And as we look to IT being more and more strategic, making sure that we've got enough people entering the industry to help fill out those roles, and perhaps even create new roles. You know, do you have new roles up and coming that people haven't even thought about? Perhaps chief social media officer within a company. How are we getting new people coming into the industry, bringing those new and fresh ideas if they're not looking at technology with that view?
Barnaby, you have this ability to reach out and engage, and as a result, you come across many kinds of resources. And, you know, we're flooded with different kinds of information, repositories, and there's the online environment and so forth. I really want to take your expertise here as what you see as your top recommended resources and why.
Well, I think, you know, I may be a little bit different here in that, you know, I'm probably not going to net out one specific site that I go to or one specific place that I look, but certainly the one overwhelming theme is that definitely it's online. That's where I'm getting the majority of my information and definitely where I'm going to point people towards. What I find, though, is, you know, traditionally people would look at, you know, is it Engadget or Slashdot or one particular technology site as a source of information. I think what I try to look at is find what are the areas that I'm interested in, you know, whether it is something like IPv6 or whether it's software plus services. And then I start to look at, you know, things like Twitter, things like Facebook, things like some of the different alert services, putting in some of those keywords on sites like Technorati to see what sort of responses are coming up. And I think the reason behind that is it gives you a lot better flavor of the breadth of what people are talking about, what the issues are, as opposed to picking one site and getting sort of that view on things. So if I was to say, you know, what's the one resource? Certainly get familiar with your search engine. That's the obvious one, whether it's Live, whether it's Google, or whether it's any other search engine. But also look beyond that. You know, what are the search tools that go out and perhaps do a better job of indexing different blogs? What are the search tools that go out and index sort of the near real-time mini-blog sites like Twitter, where you can often get news as it happens long before you'd ever see that in print media or perhaps even on sort of the TV or radio news? which allow you to stay a lot more up to date on breaking issues, but also allows you to really hone in on what are the technology areas of interest, what are the specific things that you're interested in hearing about, and having them delivered to you in a much more proactive fashion as opposed to you going out and sort of looking for things reactively.
Again, you know, you have this history of engagement and dealing with a lot of different kinds of organizations and groups and IT practitioners and business people. And also in your travels, you've visited many cities and you've encountered many kind of interesting situations. You must have some interesting stories to tell, maybe centered around some themes like something that's amusing or perhaps surprising or inspirational, disruptive, or historical.
Well, you know, certainly the one thing that, you know, as I got into some of these different roles, and I've certainly been talking to customers for many, many years, and I think the one thing that surprises me is, and this may sound a little cliche, but really how small the world is, and especially how small the IT ecosystem is within Canada and around the world. And what I mean by that is I'll share a couple of specific examples. You know, certainly a couple of years ago I was out doing a tour, doing an event for Microsoft. I was one of the keynote speakers, and I arrived at the venue, and I was being introduced to some of the key people, some of the people I'd be introducing, and running through the order of the show. And one of the names I was sort of looking through sort of looked very familiar, and as it turns out, someone that I'd done business with from one of my previous roles. And as you start talking to people, you realize that the industry as a whole isn't that big. Once you start talking to people and making connections, those connections take you a long way within the industry. And I would certainly say, both from a, you know, a surprising aspect, running into people that you haven't seen in a number of years, but from an inspirational aspect, never forget and never sort of discount the value of making those personal connections. And this really ties back to some of those social media tools as a way to stay connected with what's happening in the industry, what's happening with people that you've met in the past. And never treat those as sort of one-off interactions, really viewing that as, you know, what's the long-term social interaction that I can have with these people? Because you really never know where you're going to end up or where they're going to end up and perhaps where your paths may cross in the future.
We're going to shift directions here just for a moment. And, you know, there's this UN-founded International Federation for Information Processing, or IFIP. And they have this thing called the Professional Practice Partnership Program, which is around receiving, global certification and a code of ethics and all on global standards and so forth. And this program received full ratification at the World General Assembly in August of last year, and their first implementation meeting was held in Montreal in October of last year. And again, as I mentioned, this is a historical inflection point that it speaks to IT as a recognized profession with global standards and ethics and widely adopted professional certification, and all of this happened in 2009. Can you provide some comments on this program?
Absolutely, and I think you've actually hit on a couple of them just in asking the question. I mean, if you look at the industry today, there's certainly a number of different vendor-specific technology certifications which will certify that an individual is proficient on a technology, has a certain level of skill to go out and implement or manage a solution. I think what this particular program does from a global perspective is really takes it to another level, which says absolutely the people that are certified under this program have a level of proficiency around the technologies from a broad basis. But it goes further. It talks about things like the code of ethics. And I think that becomes really, really key, especially as you look to businesses that are doing more online, that are using technology. We hear about things like breaches and security. You know, you can be technically proficient, but are you following the best practices? Are you committed to staying up to date with the technology? Do you have that code of ethics that you're abiding by? And I think that what that means from a business perspective is now I can go out and I can look at an individual, regardless of where they come from, and have a common set of criteria on which to judge someone and base a recommendation or perhaps a hiring decision to say this person is globally recognized as adhering to these articles of ethics, they have a certain level of technical proficiency. That gives me a lot more faith and a lot more comfort bringing that person into my organization as someone that I think is going to be valuable in being able to help with whatever the technology question might be. So I think from a global perspective, as we look to global workforce, this is something that really makes it easy, as I said, for professionals to travel worldwide and have those credentials recognized.
You know, we're at the point of the interview where I sort of turn the tables, Barnaby, so, and that's where I'm saying to you, now, if you were the interviewer, what kinds of questions would you ask? And then now you're going to have to answer them. What would be your answers?
Well, the one thing that, you know, as I listen to interviews and to that maybe puts a little personal feel on it is sort of asking and looking at what people do in their spare time and in their free time. I mean, certainly we've talked about the business side of things and the work side of things. I always like to hear a little bit about what people do kind of as maybe their stress relief or as their sort of their free time or their personal side of things.
Okay, so what would be your answer?
Perfect. So, you know, from my standpoint, there's a couple of things that I look at, and obviously, you know, we've talked a lot about technology, and that's an area that I have a lot of passion. So I definitely spend some time out of the office working on that. But the two things that I really am spending a lot of time personally on right now, one is family. I have a new young son at home, so that's just a thrill a minute watching him grow up and develop. And then the thing that goes hand in hand with that, obviously, is photography. I've been a photo buff for many, many years, always on the lookout for the new, latest and greatest technology, but also being able to go out and capture those moments and then share those with friends, with family, or perhaps even more broadly if it's applicable. So those are two things that, you know, give me a great deal of pleasure when I'm not in the office and are a great way to kind of unwind at the end of the day and perhaps blow off a little steam.
Well, Barnaby, I really enjoyed this session with you today, and I mean, you know, we're very fortunate to have somebody of your stature come in and speak to this audience. So, you know, we'll continue to follow your significant contributions that shape technology, business, and IT communities. And really, we thank you for sharing your time and your insights with us.
Well, thank you, Stephen. I certainly appreciate the opportunity.